Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman, writing solo today. You're going to find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Stephen the Warman, all one word, no hyphenations, no nothing there, just Stephen the Warman. So Stephen the Warman, you find me on Twitter. Also, for those who are listening to the podcast, you are hearing my voice in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog. The direct blog is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload a show usually once a week. This so far this year, I've actually been doing a pretty good job of being able to get a show in almost every week. But adding to it, the kickboxing action and the Muay Thai action of late has given me something to talk about almost every week. So I've been pretty excited about that. Glad that I'm able to talk to you guys on a regular basis. So the direct blog, as I said, lordgaul.podbean.com. Also, the most efficient way to get the show is just to go to the iTunes search engine, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter lordgaul. Lord Gaul was my username back when I first got into, you know, the fight forums that got me into the sport, Kakatugi, K1 fans, K1 USA, so on and so on. So thank you all for, again, listening to my last few shows. I've been grateful to have the guests on with, you know, Pat Wyman and Dave Walsh. So I've really been excited about things that have been happening in the kickboxing world. Also, thank you to the people who gave me the kind words as far as my MMA fighters. I had a good weekend. Chaz Skelly, Team Takedown Fighter, was able to get a TKO stoppage yesterday on the UFC card. Or I guess I better say the date. It is Sunday today, the 15th. So on the 14th, Valentine's Day, Chaz Skelly got a victory in the UFC. His 3-1 in the UFC now. And then I've got two guys, both undefeated. One on Legacy, which is a promotion here in the United States that has a televised portion and an untelevised portion. My future 125er, Mark De La Rosa, was able to win on the undercard there. And then the first fight on the main card was my 6-0 welterweight name by the name of Andrew Parker. So we're really having good times and a lot of good success, and people have been messaging me, so I wanted to thank you guys. Definitely going to jump into the action. There's so much to talk about. A lot happened in 1 week, and I'm really excited. I'm going to try to hit up the stadiums. I'm going to try to hit up some Muay Thai fights in France. I really want to get kickboxing to you guys on an international level to the best of my ability. I'm going to be all over the world today, and I'll go ahead and jump right into it. First of all, of course, the biggest show was the Glory Show. Glory 19 took place in Virginia here in the States, and it really was a very entertaining card. Once again, not only was it an entertaining card, but the second highest ratings came from this card. And it's always huge when your best product is shown on your biggest night, because that makes people want to come back and watch it. So to hear that they're, you know, Nikki Holtzkin, who was also on the best rated show they've ever had, once again competed on a high level and showed his skill set, which is just, I mean, it's not just that he's technical and smart, but his combination flow, his shot selection, it's just so savvy. People who watch him want to watch him again. So I really thought that Nikki Holtzkin performing well on this card was huge. And the only kind of downfall to the whole card was just the freak injury that Errol Zimmerman suffered in the last fight of the night. But we'll go ahead and jump into the fights and break them down one by one. Rigo Verheerven gets a TKO victory over Errol Zimmerman. As I mentioned before, Errol Zimmerman attempted a spinning back kick after it missed. His knee landed really weird. And it just shows how game he is as he's sitting down. At first they began the count because they thought that he, you know, was hurt with something. And then he asked about the knee, and then, like, you could visibly see that the kneecap was out of socket. And then Errol just looked up the ref and says, "Can't you just pop it back in?" And that's what a warrior is. That's what a fighter is. I'm telling you, that kind of mentality, to look at that kind of injury, to know you can't stand because your kneecap's not in the right place, and then to just say, "Oh, could you pop it back in so I go back in there and compete?" That's the highest level of toughness. Before that, Rico Verheerven, who, as I mentioned before, in 44 pro fights that I can recall, I believe he's got 10 stoppages. So he's been able to drop people before, but if there's one reason why people think that they're going to have an opportunity to get Rico Verheerven, it's because he doesn't threaten the, you know, the possibility of stopping them. Like, so that means that some period of time, someone's going to bite down and just throw haymakers and possibly, you know, get something on him that could possibly knock him down. And that's what happened in his last fight. Before this, you know, when he was fighting on the China Kunlun fight, he just got caught, and then he got caught again at the end of the second round. And this time he came in focused. His baby was almost, you know, the struggles with, not necessarily struggles, but he had a family situation where His child was going to be born. Child was actually born a day after he had returned. He had so much going on. He took that last fight because he needed to stay busy and it was an opportunity to fight. And he's a prize fighter. This is how he makes money. So here he gets full camp, gets the right people around him, gets to prepare and go out there, and he performed great. Like, I thought that his hands were good. He's always had good combination of low kick flow. He got it all going really early, but the biggest thing was the way he responded when Errol charged at him. You could see that they had trained it. When Errol charged, he followed Errol's leaping left hook with right hand, and he was able to score inside as Errol was coming after him. And he had Errol in trouble in that first round, several times hurting him, several times getting combination flow, and he was patient about it. He could have just went headhunter the whole time. As soon as he was able to score upstairs big, he still went with the low kicks. He still went with his kick game. Rico Verhoeven was on his way to producing the type of, I won't necessarily say star-making performance, because he's already a pretty, you know, big name in the sport. But for the people watching that performance and watching him perform, they would have been like, I want to watch this guy again. And I still feel people want to watch him again due to that more exciting fight. The last fight with him and Gita was so plotty, and it was a battle of singles, and there's almost no combination flow, and neither guy really got into their groove during that battle. So if you watch that fight, you're probably like, you know what, this guy doesn't have power, he kind of fights at a distance, he's safety first, I don't want to watch this guy. This fight is the kind of fight where you're like, okay, this Rico guy is legit. I want to see him fight. He performed really, you know, very, very well. I thought that he was definitely getting the better over Errol throughout the fight before the injury had happened. Errol had his moments where he stormed in and maybe a shot or two got through in some of his flurries, but most of it was just Rico able to, you know, fire inside of his shots, able to step off to the side, able to, you know, combination low kick, combination body kick, great game. The head kick that he throws to kind of throw people off, good stuff by Rico Verhoeven as he continues to be the glory heavyweight champion. We move into the tournament field, and we'll go ahead and work ourselves from the semis to the final. Nicky Holtzkin and Alexander Setsarenko was a very entertaining fight. If only Alexander Setsarenko had a little bit more pop, I thought that he could have done even more. But Nicky Holtzkin, who I've mentioned before, he's got those gaps where he just waits moments out, where he just, you know, whether he's reading you, he's letting you get tired like he did with Khabib Gaji. Like, he just plays defense for a while. And other people can be offensive. You can make the argument that Alexander Setsarenko scored more shots because the little shots to the body and the way that he was looping the behind the guard of Nicky Holtzkin, and just being active in general, went to Alexander Setsarenko. But when Nicky Holtzkin threw shots, those were the significant scores. Like the way he rips through the body, his combination flow, his step-up knees that were going through the guard of Alexander Setsarenko, those were the shots that mattered the most. And I thought that Nicky Holtzkin did a good job of finding the right moments to score. And though it was close, and like I said, I could take an argument for Setsarenko and I could take an argument for an extra round because it was close because of the volume of Setsarenko, Nicky Holtzkin gets through and he moves on to the next round. But again, the combination flow, the way he rips the body, people are just into him when they watch him fight. Raymond Daniels went out and did what Raymond Daniels did, but he showed more skill in the boxing in this fight than I think in any of his previous fights. And he had showed it a little bit when he had, you know, go against Francis Ambong in the past. Like, he was able to get the hand flow going a little bit before he tried, you know, before he caught him with that, you know, drop, before he dropped him with the hands flurry, and then he got the two-touch KO over Ambong. He had started to get his boxing going a little bit. But I still didn't feel like he was a established kickboxer in terms of, I feel like he's doing flash kicks or he's boxing, and there's no flow in between. That's usually what I feel when I watch him. When I watched him this time, I felt the same, but I thought the flow to it and the rhythm to it was much cleaner. Jonathan Oliveira, I picked him to win because I thought that he'd have the ability to do what pretty much all the other guys did. I mean, I believe he trains in Glory Gym, so they would know about getting close and cutting off the distance and combinations and low kicks. This camp, I think he did it all in Brazil, but he relied on his hands and, you know, his knees, and he just kept running into Raymond Daniels, and he would let Raymond Daniels off the hook. He'd let Raymond Daniels go left and right after he finally did get him in the corner, and he would just start all over. Some of the spinning back kicks they took to the body were not downs, but some of them very much were. And I think that it's tough for a ref, and it's another thing that a ref's going to have to get used to, in particular if there's going to be karate-style guys in the glory level. Refs are going to have to figure out which one was a slip and which one was kind of like a body shot dropping a guy. Jonathan had some moments that were clearly like body shots dropping a guy because he had ran into those spinning back kicks full. But there are a couple that I thought, you know what, that one probably isn't a down. With that said, Raymond Daniels, you know, who, I mean, he even tried to go straight video game after one of the downs where, you know, he did this kind of angle off step and then he jumped in the air and he tried to like sidekick, you know, Jonathan Oliveira. He was in control from the beginning. He was better, had the better distance, had the better length, had the better athleticism. He gets a TKO in round two. Get to the final of this fight, of this tournament. Nicky Holtzkin, from the start, I'm not letting you get that spinning stuff off. Close the distance. He uses footwork to use the corners to keep Raymond Daniels from going left and right. And the moment he got Raymond Daniels to stop, combination, body rip, Daniels goes down to a knee. Like the moment. Daniels got back up, game, through hands. Raymond Daniels showed heart and he showed grit and he showed determination despite the fact that he was going against a better guy. Nicky Holtzkin, once again, got him into the corner, combination low kick, combination step up knee, right through the guard. He does a good job of peeling, like when the Raymond Daniels put his guard up, Nicky Holtzkin would reach out with the left hand, rip the right hand as he peeled the glove out of the way and just got a clean shot. That's the shot that got him the victory over in the corner. Great stuff by Nicky Holtzkin. Showing how you defeat that type of style with your pressure, with using the corners, with not giving that those spinning back kicks room to breathe and doing your work in the corner. Now you can still win a combination low kick style in the middle, kind of like what you saw from Joseph Altolini, Glory Champion. He was able to still score combinations and low kicks to Raymond Daniels. He checked, I think, maybe one or, you know, two kicks the whole night. But mostly he wants to get away from all offense with his movement because he's an athletic guy. He wants to use his feet to get out of there. But this fight, man, he just was. Nicky Holtzkin always had an answer. And Raymond Daniels always got back up. So get to the third round, Raymond Daniels buys himself a little bit of time because he does a spinning back kick, which is clearly more of a knock, like knocked him off balance, but the ref called it a down, even though he shouldn't have. The result was immediate. After it happened, Daniels tried to jump in Nicky Holtzkin, wasn't having it. Nicky Holtzkin got him in the corner again, another combination flurry, drops him, and then he finishes the round with, as I mentioned before, he peeled the glove and he ripped the right hand behind, scoring right off the temple. Raymond Daniels kind of crumbles in the corner, and Nicky Holtzkin wins your tournament. I like I said before, I thought Raymond Daniels really showed a lot of skill in this one. I think he showed a lot of improvement. I still want to see the rhythm go together, the hands to the kicks, that rhythm. But he did well for himself. I'm hoping that he gets further opportunities down the road. Nicky Holtzkin, he is an amazing fighter. And just, I love his style. I love that people were entertained by watching him. I love that people were like, man, whoever this guy is, I want to see him again. That's what the sport needs. Guys like Nicky Holtzkin who show both the charisma, you know, as far as fight style, the entrance with the music. They show the entrance a little bit. Glory, you guys got to show entrance all the time. Entrances mean a lot in kickboxing. Thanks to K1, we are moved by those. Got to have those. They're part of the sport. So definitely a lot of good stuff from Nicky Holtzkin as he gets another shot at a title that really should be his anyways, as him and Joseph Valtellini go at it again later this year. Next fight on the card I want to talk about is Joe Schilling's 3-round decision over Robert Thomas. From the beginning, Joe Schilling was just better. And I can't stress to you guys enough how difficult Joe Schilling is to get a read on. Joe Schilling switches stance. He's got tricky, you know, kick, whether he goes inside or to the outside. His spinning back kicks, his spinning back fist. He plays angles weird. Robert Thomas was game. He was able to score in between. He was able to sit down on some shots here and there because Joe Schilling is hittable. But he just wasn't able to find rhythm. And that's huge. It's huge if you can keep somebody always guessing and always trying to score as opposed to somebody who goes out there and they know what they're doing. And Joe Schilling did a good job of working his range, throwing his hands in combination. I really thought that his flow was really good. And then he did a absolutely awesome, you know, score, like, you know, move to score the down. Basically, Joe Schilling walks Robert Thomas down and he does a spinning back fist with his left hand. The left hand kind of gets caught in the glove, and then he extends it out. He posts with the left hand after the spinning back fist has been caught, and then he uses that to measure, and he drops the right hand right behind it. Robert Thomas's head shoots straight back. I believe that technique is how it was done. I may have the hands wrong because it's been a week since I've seen the fight, so it could have been left hand or right hand that he threw that strike. But I'm pretty sure, if I remember it correctly, he went spinning back fist with the left hand, then he posted with the left hand after the spinning back fist had scored, and then he dropped the right hand straight down the middle. It was absolutely beautiful stuff. And despite the fact that Robert Thomas's head pretty much, you know, Pez dispenser snapped back, he got up. And he's just a tough guy. He he plays with weird angles and stuff too. He seemed like, you know, Joe Schilling said, he reminds me of myself. He just, you know, isn't as experienced here. And I thought that Thomas made a great showing for himself. I thought that Joe Schilling, who is a draw, who is entertaining, is a known name in the States as a kickboxer. Did really good stuff there. He moves on to fight in Bellator in a couple months. But really excited about that win because he did a good job. And he brought up a fight, possible fight with Philip Verlinden, saying that, you know, he knows that Artur Levan is the champion. He said, but I want to get some fights in before I try that again. That is the right kind of thinking. I can't stress you guys enough how important that is for people to say, hey, this level of guy is really good. I need to prepare myself to beat this level of guy. Joe Schilling, like I said before, the down that he got off the Superman in the first fight with Artem Levin was the reason why he had won that fight, because the total of the rounds were all scored pretty much by Artem Levin. He's winning the rounds. Just Joe Schilling had that, and then he had the down, the controversial down off the kick. That was why he was able to beat Artem Levin a couple of years ago. But last year, it just showed the skill of Artem Levin is just exceptional. He's an exceptional fighter, very difficult to get a read on. Weird angles, weird volume, very strong. And Joe Schilling's like, I got to get better before I can fight this guy. Him choosing to, you know, possibly fight Philip Verlinden next is the right type of thinking. I really want to see that from him. And man, it's just, it shows the growth of the sport when people say, this is the level this guy's on. I need to get myself better so that I can beat that guy. Last thing I want to mention about this main card was they had a military showdown fight between Cedric Smith as he gets a TKO over James Horley. Now, I'm not going to speak on the fight because really it was like an amateur fight. The only thing I want to say, you know, of course, shout out to the military and the good stuff that they do. But the only thing that I really want to say about this fight is it shouldn't have been on the televised portion. They probably should have just showed a highlight of it. They should have put Andy Risty and Steve Moxon on the card because they're pro fighters. And then they should have been like, you know, Glory did this thing where they teamed up with the military because they showed the commercial, the wellness commercial, and they showed, you know, the different Glory fighters holding pads for the soldiers. That's all good. All they needed to do with Cedric Smith and James Hurley was do a highlight of their fight, which was TKO stoppage, and then have them in there maybe, you know, for a little presentation like, you know, or some filmed presentation from earlier tonight. But for them to be in the televised portion of the card, their full fight, I would have gone a different direction. They could have accomplished the same thing by showing a highlight of it and then showing the guys in there, you know, and what the ceremony was like for the TV viewers. I would have preferred to get Andy Risty and Steve Moxon in because they are, you know, elite names in the pro kickboxing, and I want my television card to all be based on that. Could have gone to the Super Fight Series. Andy Risty gets a first round stoppage over Steve Moxon. This one was written on the wall before it started. Steve Moxon did what a lot of other people do against Andy Risty. They throw hands and they find that they're able to hit him early. But Andy Risty, I mean, despite the fact that he had that weird, fifth round loss to David Kyria, his jaw is usually pretty good. Like, he can take some good shots. And he's got a long, you know, long body, and he takes shots while he's leaning back, but his chin's usually pretty good. But the moment Andy Risty gets a hold of you, the moment he hits you, it's just all downhill. And Andy was able to score those big long hooks, his step-up knees. He was able to get a stoppage in the first round after three downs. He's just an exceptional, exceptional fighter. This win gets him a shot with Robin van Roosmalen. They're going to do it in Dubai. So they're going to be right back at it. And, you know, he goes from this fight where he took no injuries into a 8-week camp where he gets himself ready for Dubai. Couldn't have been a better scenario for him. It's really cool that it worked that way for him to just segue right into that fight after this win. Steve Moxon is a guy that a Josh Johnsey or a Max Bermont, like those kind of fights can happen for Steve Moxon, but there's a level of fighter that he struggles with. And as we talked about on the last podcast, you know, he beats, you know, Ekpareja, which is a big win, and starting to wonder about Ekpareja's jaw because he got stopped again recently. But he gets that kind of win, and you're like, oh, maybe he could stand with the elites. But then you go before that one, and he goes against Bukau, and it's not even close. Moxon is a serviceable kickboxer who's got an awesome kickboxing style, and if you are a promoter in this world, you want to use this guy in your international card because he's going to come in and he's going to let his hands go and he's going to go combination of kicks. And if he's losing, he's going to still be able to throw bombs like he did with Reef McAllister. And if he is, you know, winning, he's going to have a style that you enjoy. And if he gets blown out, he's going to get blown out like you enjoy because he's a guy who brings it. And no matter what happens in the results, he's going to show up. He's never going to shut it down. And I think, you know, guys who are like, okay, I'm going to get to a decision or I'm going to stop throwing activity or I've already gotten the bag. Moxon is going full speed. He's worth the price of admission. but unfortunately, there's a level of guy that's really, really tough for him. Andy Risty, who's older, Andy Risty's like 34, going on 35. He got into the game late. You know, he's 27, 28 when he was first fighting on the It's Showtime cards back in the day. But man, just put it together every single fight, every single, you know, opportunity to compete. Definitely figured out his length, his step-up knees. Even though he's not with Lucien Corbin anymore, that time there was spent well. Roberto is now his coach. Roberto, I forget his last name at this moment, but he is known for working with Alistair Overeem. Those guys have been together for a really long time. But man, really good stuff by Andy Risty. Xavier Vinny gets a first-round TKO over Everett Sims. This one, of course, was Vinny's got to get used more. And they're saying that they're going to do a heavyweight tournament. There's a possibility that we're going to see Rico, Errol, you know, probably Gita, either of the more of the heavyweights that they have on Roster and Glory in a tournament later this year. It's been a while since we've had a heavyweight tournament, so we definitely want to see that again. And he should be in that field if you want somebody from the States. He's big. You know, he's exceptionally big. He's decently athletic. You know, as Dave Walsh mentioned before, he was a football star. Instead of pursuing football, I pursued kickboxing, which shows how much you love the sport, and it shows the kind of athlete that you have. We want to get him used, and we want to go back. You know, maybe if they go to California, they fight somewhere close to where he grew up, and, you know, in the next major city or whatever, and you get a draw in this guy. So, Xavier Vinning, very talented, gets a first-round TKO over Everett Sims. Again, bigger, stronger, better. Want to see him go against some more elite names. You know, it doesn't have to be a huge step up. You know what I'm saying? You could find somebody that's like Errol Zimmerman would be kind of a big step up, but I'd still like to see that kind of fight. You know, like I want to see him compete, but I want them to see them make the right move with his next steps. Josh Johnson gets a third round TKO over Max Vermont. And as I mentioned before, Josh Chauncey, he's got it. He's got the tools. He's got the legit beard and mustache set up. Like, this guy comes out there, combination flow, step-up knees. He's just got a natural kickboxing flow that few guys in the USA have. It's just, and it's coming. You know, there's going to be better kickboxers that come. But the athleticism matters, too. So there are guys who are doing good things in the amateur tournaments. There's a big one in Virginia. There's a big one in Iowa that we have here in the States. But that isn't the key. You know, the key for us to get exposure and do well on the international scene for guys like Josh Chauncey in Canada to, you know, and guys like Joseph Antolini, for those guys to just start to put together a series of wins where they get to see their combination of low kick style get put together. It's very, very important that this happens. If it happens, if this success does come for these guys, when they get those opportunities to fight the Kareem Gaji's and the, you know, Max Bermont in this situation, the Steve Moxons, Josh Johnson, Steve Moxon would be a great next fight to do. You know, like we can move these athletes, they can have success. They just need competition like this. They need to grow and move and get their style to match up against the best in the world, as opposed to just winning in their local areas. You know, you have to have the opponents to push it as well. That's one thing that they have in Europe that they don't have in America. It's not that the coaching is, because the coaching is slowly starting to come. You're starting to see guys who are figuring out that combination style. It's the athletes that you have involved. The fact that a lot of these guys who do mixed martial arts have some kickboxing skill, but they pursue MMA because there's not necessarily more money, but definitely more exposure in it. I mean, there can be more money, but I'm telling you, as a guy who works with guys who work in the UFC, it's just, you've got to be winning for a while in the UFC before you're seeing some good income. Other than that, you know, you could be working just a regular job at, you know, and make more than you would as a fighter. It's the consistency of the wins and the UFC level that brings money, as opposed to just who you are and, you know, that it's MMA, that won't do it. Josh Chauncey's in a situation where, okay, he's put together a couple performances where not only has he looked good, he's looked spectacular. He's been able to get stoppages. People want to see his brand of fighting. We've got to get him on TV, and we've got to get him a guy like Steve Moxon, and we've got to have a fight in like Toronto or something like that where a hometown crowd can come out and say, you know what, this guy really represented for us today. That's what we have to have moving forward. Other prospects moving up, Brian Collette gets a 3-round decision victory over Myron Dennis. Myron Dennis boxed a couple weeks ago, and he decided to come into this fight. He was called 3 weeks ago. As I mentioned to you guys before, I've worked with Myron Dennis in the past. I wasn't able to work with him for this fight. But he has the tools to be a successful kickboxer. He's got a good combination of low kick style. He like I said, he just came off the boxing match. He lets his hands go. Brian Collette, fighting at home, felt more comfortable, got his low kick game going, was the stronger guy throughout as far as being able to score inside, and then he was able to score down as both guys were throwing kicks at the same time, and his head kick got there first, scoring it down in Myron Dennis in the third. Myron Dennis was able to get up. Brian Collette was able to get the 3-round decision. Myron, you can make the argument that Myron probably won the first round, but rounds 2 and 3 were definitely for Collette. And I like that Myron went for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get this fight on short notice, you're going to go fight this guy in his hometown, and you're going to go for it. You don't care. I'm going to take the fight. It gives me an opportunity to fight amongst the best, and I'm going to test myself, and I'm going to go. And I thought that Brian Collette did a great job of slowing Myron with the low kicks. Did a good job of keeping his consistency. I thought Myron did a good job with his low kicks, but he got them flowing too late. And Brian had already gotten the lead on those scores, and I thought that it was good for both guys. Myron Dennis, Brian Collette, they need international competition. They need guys to come in and push them. And, clearly you're like, hey, they just fought each other in states, and maybe they showed that their skill isn't ready for the international scene. But I think their styles show that, you got to move them with the right opponent. So when you find a guy in an international scene to come in and compete with them, that might bring out a different part of their skill set. They might grow from this fight to that time on, but they're not going to do it just going against another guy from the states. You've got to experience that to know it. For those who watched the MMA fight last night with Benson Henderson, and he went against Brandon Thatch. Benson said, when I took this fight, I didn't know if I could win it, but that's why I took the fight. I needed to find out if I could. And I think that that's what fighting has got to be about. Glory's got to segue into letting these guys figure out who they are by having them compete against opposition outside of themselves in the States. Francis Ngannou gets a second round TKO win over Stephen Richards. And I picked Stephen Richards to get the upset here. I was a little upset heavy on this card. Stephen Richards almost did it. I thought that he did a good job with his combination flow. He had a boxer stance. He had his hands down. Francis Ngannou was able to score with the big low kicks. But I thought that Stephen Richards was winning the majority of the rounds as Francis Ngannou was looking to score in spots. And then, boom, big shot lands, and Francis Ngannou is your winner. I see TKO on this thing. I watched it. That was a straight-up KO by Francis Ngannou. Again, talks so that he might fight in glory again down the road. Also talks that he would possibly fight on the the Legacy Kickboxing Series. Francis Ngannou, I can't believe, like I mentioned last time, he's only 28, that blew me away. I want to see him fight more. He's got a good kickboxing style. Hopefully he can figure out just that next step of savviness, because usually it's just combination low kicks. If my power doesn't do it, my low kicks don't do it, I usually lose. So I'm hoping that as he develops his skill set, he can do something a little bit more, because he's still down in the cards as far as getting total scores. But he's got that pop. And if you can hit a guy, you can get yourself out of a lot of bad situations. It doesn't matter what the cards are against you, if you're sure, if you could crack a guy. So I definitely want to see him compete more. Good stuff from this card in general. I thought Virginia was a good host. I thought they had a decent crowd. And as I said before, the TV numbers were huge. Definitely, definitely big for the sport. Going to go into Infusion. Infusion had a card over that same weekend. I absolutely loved my kickboxing weekend a week ago. And I'll go ahead and start with, I won't do the whole card because I didn't feel like the whole card was of high-level international significance. But I will do a decent amount of cards. I'll go through the second fight of the card, which is Sina Winderchoven as she take on Marika Post. And I thought that Post was exceptional. I'm not going to get into this too big because there's a chance that when I have Rosie Hayward back on, she will be, her and I will break this fight down in more in depth. Also, I want to take a small moment to thank Rosie Hayward, who recently, I said in my podcast when I had her, she went to that seminar that was done by Christy Bereton and my British daughter, Mom Barlow. And when she went to that seminar, she said that I asked her to ask some questions for me, and she said, okay, I'll do it. So she went to the seminar, and she posted it on my Facebook wall that, Stephen Warman White wanted me to do this interview and that kind of deal. So I appreciate the shout out from Iman and Christy, and I definitely appreciate Rosie Hayward going to the seminar and experiencing that. So Marika Post, who is actually in the States right now with her teammate, who's getting ready to fight this coming up weekend in Urena Bears, Post was stronger throughout, I felt. I felt like she showed another skill set in each round. I thought that she could have got the knees going early because of her strength. She actually got the knees going later. I thought she did a good job with her combination flow. I thought she did a good job with her single kicks. Sheena Wunderschova never gave herself the offensive output to compete in these rounds. I really felt like she was every round waiting on something. In the third round, I thought she was more active, but I thought that Post was able to take a tour in the second half of that round. Wunderschova has decent skill set, just not consistent scoring. We'll lose it in the card for you every single time. But I definitely want to say that was an entertaining push by Post, and I want to see her fight more. These girls were, I want to say, the 61 kg weight class, or wait, they had 60, so I think 63 is the one above it. Whatever their highest weight class is for the women, I think is where Wunderschova and Post fought. But thought it was a good win for Post, and hopefully we'll see more for her on the international scene. Go ahead and get into the next fight on the card that I want to talk about. It was a, we'll skip that one. I'll go with Camille Janelle versus Khalid El-Bukhari. I thought that Khalid El-Bukhari, who I've seen fight a couple times, he's showing more skill. It was close after the first two rounds. I thought that you could make an argument that Bukhari had taken the fight in the three, but the extra, he did make it clear with his volume and his output. So definitely want to see more from Khalid El-Bukhari moving forward. Also, as we go down the card, we'll say, I guess I can say this. The Yagish Yugoyan fighter from Armenia gets a victory over Denis Stoltenbach. Again, I didn't know if that this is the highest one in terms of international profiling. I thought that the win by Yagish was just a solid victory, and we'll see more from him in future, and I'll see what he has down the road. The fight that I definitely can't wait to talk about. In fact, I'm going to say the last fight just so I can get to this fight. The last fight was Ismael Lazar, as he gets a five-round decision over Thomas Vanesti. And here's my thing about Thomas. Thomas did a great job of showing toughness, because Ismael Lazar, who is bigger than I've seen him before, like he's let that stomach go out even more. And he's always had a little bit of a belly. Like, he's never been one guy. He's not the guy who shocks you when he walks into the room. And you'd be surprised if you were to think, if you were to say, I'm a fighter. Most people would be like, I don't believe you until you actually saw it. Ismael Lazar has a lot of good skill set. Throws good power shots, throws a good combination of low kicks, and he's gritty. He'll get in there. He's really, really tough. He has good skill set. I thought he was a little bit bigger this time, and I thought he was able to score the big shots that he scored on Thomas before, but he wasn't able to put them together all the way. This actually, when I first saw these guys matched up and I saw how Thomas's defense was, I was like, Thomas is going to get knocked out. But Thomas stayed the course. He took the big shots. He was able to score good step knees. He was able to score kicks, and he was able to score offense in between every once in a while. He was able to be first a few times, but Ismael Lazar was better in every single round and won. But as they were talking about in the commentary, and actually did a good job bringing this up with Vinny Shorman, what would Ismael Lazar look like if he was smaller? Because there's a level of guy that's really, really good out there. And if he wants to see if he could beat those guys, he's going to need just to add to his athleticism. Because those guys can play. Daniel Gide can stay away from you with kicks the whole fight without even using his hands. How do you close the distance on that? How do you close that gap against that level of guy? Thomas was able to, you know, withstand the shots, and in spots have offense. Ismael Lazar, you think you're going to be able to get away with that with the, you know, Nicky Holtzkins of the world? It's a lot harder. The Daniel Gita's of the world, the Gokhan Sakis of the world, it's a lot harder. With that said, he did go 25 minutes, and for the most part, his offensive output was pretty solid. Like, he didn't have these moments where he was, like, sucking air and he's grabbing his knees. I thought that his offensive output was really good, so Infusion Heavyweight Champion, still Ismael Lazar. The fight of this card, and I'm telling you, I'll be talking about this kid for a while, Muhammad Uriah and his victory over Tayfun Oskin. I'm telling you, Muhammad Uriah is the truth. Like, he's such an awesome fighter. Tayfun Oskin, it was one of the fights of the year. Combination of low kick style was absolutely awesome from both guys, but it's not just that they do combos and low kicks. Like I said, if you watch the Dutch style now, you're going to see a diverse set of skill sets. Not everybody's going to be your Andy Sauer and Gokhan Saki combination of low kick style. Some of them are going to have combinations with low kicks in it, but they're also going to have combinations with high kicks and combinations with body kicks and combinations that start kick twice and then combo with hands and then in step-up knees. Like, the flow is starting to look a little bit different. Muhammad Uriah represents that flow. Tayfun Oskin, double body shots with the left hand and then the high kick afterwards. Did an awesome job of just showing power in the first round. In the first round, it looked like Oscar and the bigger, stronger athlete was going to just win this fight because Muhammad Jiraiya, despite the fact that he was able to score in moments with good, flashy, skilled combinations, it looked like Tayfun Oskin was the stronger, more poised fighter after round one. Then comes round two, Muhammad Jiraiya started to get separation. The combination flows, the body kicks, the high kicks to keep Tayfun off balance, to knock him left and right, to keep his offense from coming back. I thought Jiraiya took round two, and then round three, Tayfun Oskin had some moments early, but then Jiraiya had taken it down the stretch. Definitely more offense, more combination flow, more volume with both offensive efficiency, with offensive skill set, and with total scores, both significant and busy work was done by Muhammad Jiraiya. So I thought that they were going to have the score 2-1 after three. Then they decided that they were going to go to an extra round. The extra round was all Muhammad Jiraiya, but it wasn't that he just won. No, it wasn't that he just went out there and dominated with his kickboxing skill set. Like, that wasn't it in itself. Muhammad Jiraiya went out there and took the fight from Tayfun Oskin completely. Like, there, nothing in it was like, man, Jiraiya was really fighting back. Oskin was really, really tough. He left no doubts. He didn't get up on the cards and was like, all right, I won those 2 minutes. I'm going to spend this last minute playing defense. He went for the kill. From the whole round, he let it go. Hands, combinations, body kicks, floor, flashy. The crowd was into it. It's just an awesome, awesome scene. Infusion TV on YouTube has this fight posted. Go watch this fight. It is just an awesome fight. It's the reason why I love kickboxing is when I watched this fight. Like, I had goosebumps when I watched it. Like, I felt like I was so into it. Like, I was like, I can't believe what I'm watching. I can't believe how awesome this kid is. Muhammad Jiraiya, 18 years old. I'm telling you, there's always going to be another star around the corner, and this is an example of that. Speaking of another star around the corner, I'm going to go to Japan for two results. First of all, we're going to go to Rise, where Masaki Nori, one of my kids, gets a victory over Ilias Bilal. And it was not a fight that has gotten online yet, but it was described as one of the fights of the night. And I'm telling you, it's just the kind of fight that you have to have. Ilias Bilal, up-and-coming champion, infusion champ, definitely with his volume, with his striking selection is awesome. The inside low kicks that he goes for, the body kicks, the combination floor to his step-up knees, all awesome. He goes against Masaki Nori, who's got... Masaki Nori can win complete rounds with just kicks, with body kicks, with low kicks, with his angles. His step-up knees are good, but his timing and his hand power is very deceiving. He's able to get a decision here, but Ilias Bilal afterwards, who it seemed like none of their camp was saying that they were robbed. It seemed like they were like, we fought good, we're young, one day we're going to get this guy. But here's the weird thing. Masaki Nori is like 2 years older than Ilias Bilal, you know? And it just shows how good this new young generation of fighters are. Not to mention, Japan's focus on the weight classes below 70 kgs is absolutely going to make them the center of kickboxing for a lot of smaller weight guys internationally. They've already announced that they've got a 55-kg tournament coming up, and Yuta Kubo is going to make 55 kgs. His name was mentioned for it, and I don't know if he's in a super fight or if he's in the tournament, but that blows me away, because Yuta Kubo was once the glory champion at 65 kgs, and in that fight, he was able to be the stronger man and score down over Masaki Nori. 6 months later, Masaki Nori gets that victory back and becomes the crush champion, and here he is fighting Ilias Bilal, and definitely showing that he is the best in the world at 65 kgs. I still believe that. And I think the way that Japan is focused on these smaller weight classes is going to give international kickboxers who are that small the option who didn't have it before. There's a reason why Yuri Mess, who's one of the best fighters ever, you know, I'll say he's one of the best fighters of his generation at 77 kgs, because there was no 77 kg guy that was a legit out there. Like, he was the guy in that weight class, from 2000, 2005. And then, of course, he ran into Tyrone Spong, who then went on to be the killer at 77, 78 kgs. Like, he was just absolutely awesome there. But before him was Yuri Mess. And Yuri Mess didn't have a K1 to go to. It was 154 or was heavyweight. So forever, the whole kickboxing world said, if you weigh 180 or something like that, you got to try to get yourself up and weight so you can get to K1 level and fight on the big cards in Japan, or you have to lose weight and get down to 54. And in some situations, like with Coke Glagonorsen, for those who are wondering, the guy who has the jumping kick knockout over Mighty Mo, that guy was too small for K1 heavyweight, but because he got into some tournament where he was like a little bit bigger, he won the Asia Grand Prix, and that's how he got into the tournament field. Went against Alexei Agnishov, and he just kind of pop-shotted him and ran around, and they gave him a victory. They moved him into the heavyweight tournament. He shouldn't have been in the heavyweight tournament. He's a little dude. He should be fighting smaller guys or guys his size, but he didn't have guys his size. He actually is the only guy to fight in both the K1 World Grand Prix and in the Max. How crazy is that? He fought 154 pounds in heavyweight. That just shows how crazy it is. Why did he have to do that? Because there's only money in two weight classes at that time. Now, with Glory coming in, Glory, 154, 170, 187 pounds, 209 pounds, heavyweight division, they're taking care of and giving opportunities for those bigger guys. K1 and their brand of fighters is like, hey, if we're going to keep this product in Japan, we got to get Japanese athletes. So they have the tournament that I mentioned to you guys before, where my other kid is Koyarube, wins that tournament at 60 kgs. Now they're doing 55 kgs. Guys like Ilias Bilal, guys like Muhammad Jiraiya, who's going to be 70 kgs. Smaller guys are getting opportunities, thanks to the Japanese promotions and their focus on these weight classes. It's been huge. It's been huge for the sport. So Ilias Bilal is going to get more opportunities like this, but he's going to continue to fight and get wins in the brand of Infusion, which is doing their job to producing new, young, up-and-coming talent. And then those guys are getting the opportunity to go out to Japan and go against the best smaller guys in the world. Absolutely awesome job by the promotion, and awesome job by both athletes competing on this crush card. We're going to move to another card from Japan. It's Andy Sauer and Rena get victories in No Kick, No Life. No Kick, No Life has got a long history of putting, you know, good international competition, but it's mostly an all-Japanese card. But every once in a while, they bring in, international names. For example, after, you know, you look at Anoa'i back when he was a killer, one of his first big international opportunities was to go fight for their promotion, No Kick, No Life in Japan. So after he had become a legend by winning two back-to-back Writers of the Year in Thailand, Fighter of the Year by the writers in Thailand, after he'd won two back-to-back, he started getting international opportunities, and one of them was on No Kick, No Life. Andy Sauer gets a three-round KO victory over Tanaka Hidoya. Again, Andy Sauer, in these last 5 months, I think he's fought like six times. He's gotten a fight for Infusion. He's gotten a fight for Shoeboxing. And those were in back-to-back weeks. He is getting the opportunity to fight on a regular basis. And it's weird. One of my roommates, and he also used to fight for me, he came up to me the other day and he goes, how come Andy Sauer hasn't signed with Glory? And I'm like, the opportunities that he's getting. And I remember I asked him this when I was signing, you know, when I was doing the documentary. And they had mentioned that, man, people are calling and asking for him all the time. So if he could keep fighting and keep being consistent and continue to be a prize fighter with his name, all the better for him. And I'm really excited about seeing Andy Sauer fight whoever. I definitely want to see him go back to Dubai. They've been putting good international cards on in Dubai, and they bring in people from all over. So whether he fights somebody who is of Arab, you know, who's Arabic, or just another international opponent, I want to see him on those cards. If they do an 8-man tournament in Glory, I would love for them to give him a call. You know, just let him keep fighting. Let him fight to the best of his ability as much as he can. Andy Sauer gets a stoppage victory. Rena is really coming into her own as one of the legit female fighters on the planet. She gets a victory over Ellie Maria Ekstrom. And my thing with this is, not only does she get a second round, with a combination flurry that lands a nether body shot killer. Like, she's known for that score. That gets her a TKO victory in the second round over Ellie. But Rena is coming into her own with both her hand power and her kickboxing consistency. Because once upon a time, people wondered, like, you know, when she was younger, if kickboxing was going to be her thing forever. Would she segue into acting, or would she just go and just want to be a normal person? Or is this just something that she's playing with? People wondered, like, you know, the rumors that I had coming out, if you look at some of the forums, people thought that she was the type of person that could lose a fight and then just lose the motivation to compete for a long time. But she, not only she fought, but her consistency in the last 5 months has been really good. She wins, you know, yet another S-Cup title, and then the S-Cup men's show bring her in for a super fight. She wins that fight. Rena's doing a great job of staying consistent, of being a prize fighter, of, you know, really selling her brand. So big win for her and that Japanese promotion. Definitely good stuff there. I'm going to go ahead and take us to the stadiums now. As like I said, everybody in the world fought this past weekend, so I'm going to go ahead and try to get to everybody in the world. And for those who didn't, you know, who didn't hear it, when I had Rob Cox, who is a writer and really, you know, sells Muay Thai and does commentary for, you know, English commentary at the stadiums or whatever, he had mentioned that the new Lumpini Stadium is awesome, but because of where it's located, it's just right outside the city and it's tough to get to because of traffic. So they haven't had the crowds that they've wanted, and sometimes they have suffered in, you know, as far as the audiences, because if they're still in downtown Bangkok, so much of a casual fan, because there's so many people that, you know, are just tourists that are just traveling, they can get a lot more of them to just take that trip. And the locals who come out all the time, you know, who will jump on, you know, 700 people on one truck, you know, they want to go too, of course, but it's difficult for them to get to the events because they're riding these big, you know, going through traffic and they're dealing with that situation. And they're like, you know what, is it worth going tonight? And you never want that to happen. So because of that, Raja has been getting, as he mentioned, Raja's been getting a lot of attention. And I'm telling you, the Rajaram Stadium fights that happened this past week, there were some awesome stuff. I'm going to focus on three fights. I'm going to focus on four stadium fights, one from New Lumpini. The other three were from that that February 12th show. One fight I'll save for last because I see it very highly. First of all, for something from a technical standpoint, we're going to go to Ridadet's elbow KO over Teperatan. And here's my thing about it. They'd gotten into the clinch. They got into the grapple. So not even full clinch. They're more still doing the arm grapple. As soon as you've seen Ridadet get the arm in position, the elbow in position, he turned his whole body as if he was throwing the left hook, and he fired the left elbow, and he knocked Teperatan down. Like it's just a clean shot on the inside, and he turned his whole torso. It's the way you want power to look. So for people who like, you know, asking me about technical breakdown, they are in the grapple with their hands. They're hand fighting. He gets his elbow in position, and his whole body turns. So just throwing the elbow, just lifting it up, just letting it work from arm to shoulder or from elbow to shoulder, that can still score. But to turn your whole body with your lead elbow the way that he did, he turned it like he was like, I mean, it almost looked like he was throwing a fastball. Like the way his whole torso turned, he generated as much power as he possibly could on his lead hand elbow, and he absolutely blitzed, ready to absolutely blitz Teperatan to get that KO. It's awesome, awesome stuff. Next fight in the card I want to talk about is, and I mentioned this before, Thetson Lek and Pet Ju Thong. I've talked about both fighters before, I've talked about both fighters before in this card. And here's my thing with this. First of all, the action was awesome. They had so many. It got started pretty quick. The body kicks that score were just massive. They were really throwing with some legit heat. And early in the rounds, Pet Ju Thong threw a right hook. And it looked like he was gauging where he was trying to get like a leaping shot. He was trying to figure out the timing of catching Thetson Lek in. After that, it was almost forgotten because the follow-up action was, again, strong with the body kicks. There was an awesome series where Thetson Lek threw a body kick and it was caught. And then he jumped to make sure that the counter kick didn't take him down in the sweep. And then what happened instead was, I want to say, Pet Ju Thong threw his own body kick, which was caught. And then he jumped to make sure the sweep coming didn't take him down. And it was just awesome back and forth action. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of, like, I'm telling you, it was like the most sudden of KOs, Thetson Lek picks up his left knee to start what's going to look like a tie march. I think he picks up his right knee that starts what's going to look like his tie march to move himself to close to distance and get into the clinch. He picks up his right knee, and then he tries to go with his left high kick. Like, he's going to throw it either to the body or to the head. He's only using the right knee march to get Pet Ju Thong thinking that the clinch was coming and to prepare him for it, and then he was going to sneak the kick in right afterwards. What happened instead, Pet Ju Thong read his distance, and he fired a left hook as the kick was coming up. So he literally punched Thetson Lek while he was in the air trying to kick, and it's just one of the weirdest looking KOs because it just catches him clean on the jaw, and his whole body flies towards the person who just hit him, you know. Thetson Lek flies towards Pet Ju Thong as he watches him fall to the mat, gets that KO victory. The flow to the fight before it, the action, the consistency of it, the way that the aggressiveness in which those body shots were landing. This You know, it's go to Muay Thais. I mentioned to them all. I mention them all the time. Whatever. This fight is just awesome. John Thong gets a body shot KO victory over Denpanam. And my thing with Denpanam is I thought that he might have even been sick. But even when I watched him go back to his corner, nobody looked confident over there. If Denpanam landed everything that he threw with John Thong, you know, not being defensive and not doing anything or whatever, I still think that John Thong would have won, because I didn't think Denpanam put enough offensive effort into getting himself out of it. Because when we got to round three, I'm like, okay, this is the round where things usually pick up. Denpanam never got it going. He never felt comfortable. He was always fighting behind, whether he was, you know, scared, whether he was sick. I'm not sure what it was, but he never gave himself the opportunity to compete. And John Thong seemed to notice it, So he closed the distance. He had started off with, you know, slowing Denpanam down with low kicks. And after he got him thinking low kick for a while, he started to go to his boxing. And sometimes, I'll be the first person to say it, I watch a lot of fights. The Thais, people can be critical of them because of their boxing. What I mean by critical of their boxing is not by execution, but by technique. Sometimes when they get somebody hurt, they just start winging it and throwing big shots to get guys out of there. And it won't look like a boxer who's a little bit cleaner in those departments. So some people think because of that, because they score the kick so heavily, because they score the clinch and throw so heavily, it's not a skill that they have or that is developed. This fight by John Thong shows that that is not true even a little bit. John Thong was very patient. He threw good combination flow. He never got overextended. And then he started to work the body. And it wasn't just his body shot, it finished with a blitz of like a shoeshine type power blitz to the body. That's how the combo ended. But before that, he just kept scoring long. And he realized that every time he threw, Denpanam would lean back, put his guard up, and then step away for a reset. And once he started to read that, he started to come in with a clean shot with the left hand to the body. He landed a few times, and then he put the flurry in, and that got him out of there. That's how it's done. That's how it's done right there. You break a guy's his tools down with your low kick. You get him thinking low kick. You start working with the boxing upstairs. He starts leaning the protected head and going away. He leaves his body shots open. You start to land body work down there, and then you finish it with a blitz. That's how it's done. That is fighting at its highest. Dom Dong would say, big time victory over Denpanam. And big time, not in terms of name, but big times in terms of a performance that changes your mind. If you thought, for instance, that, you know, Thais are just going to wing big shots if they get somebody hurt and they're not necessarily the most technical or whatever, this one will shut you up. This was absolutely clean execution by John Tong. Last fight I'm going to talk about is Sexson versus Tanachai. The reason why I'm so high in this fight, and it's already my front runner, and it's going to be tough to beat for fight of the year. If somebody were to ask me, what is Muay Thai? I would show them this fight. This fight had it all. First of all, it didn't have the slow start that you're used to seeing. These guys got the throwing blows immediately. They started off really good. It had elbow work in the clinch. It had body kicks. It had a low kick flurry. It had, you know, series in the grapples. It moved all over the place. It had a big third round where after, you know, we had competitive early goings with all eight limbs being used through rounds 1, 2, 3. Then Sexson gets up. And another thing that adds to this for me was watching the Rob Cox feed on his Twitter as he broke this fight down. But Sexson then started to work a game where he'd go combination, get Tanachai's hands up, and then he'd go into the lower body lock, and he scored it over and over and over. He scored a few dumps from it. He was able to score knees from it. You don't want to give that up. It means you're feeble. It means that you let the guy get to your body. It means that he's in control. He is dictating the fight. And after that round, I'll never forget it. Rob Cox said the odds have now just gone 34-1 in favor of Sexson winning this fight. The one was Tanachai, who came out and was landing aggressive shots. Sexson was trying to play prevent defense. It's always tough to do that for 3 minutes. A lot of times the guys get away with it. This time, Tanachai wasn't having it. He put together a hands flurry, that it had a, I want to say there was a clinched knee involved or maybe a kick involved, but I think there was hands and then there was a kick that was scored as Sexson was going down. So he scores an 8 count right at the end of the round, and that was it. This fight had everything. It is. I'm looking at it right now just to show you. The fights that I mentioned before, 3,000 views, 10,000 views, 6,000 views. As of the time that I'm telling you this, 31,000 views for Sexton versus Stanichai. And it's because everybody, it was all over my Facebook walls. I went down there. They were like, this is Muay Thai. This fight is epic. You got to see this fight. I'm going to spell the names out for you so you can get it. First of all, Muay Thais. It's Muay, M-U-A-Y, but the Thais is spelled like a tie that you would wear. T-I-E-S. And then also the names of the fighters, Sexton, S-E-K-S-A-N versus Thanachai, T-H-A-N-O-N-C-H-A-I. This is a fight that you absolutely have to see. It shows Muay Thai at its highest level. It's an absolutely wonderful back and forth. It's my fight of the year so far. We're only in February, so that shows that we're off to a really good start. If I've already mentioned fight of the year twice with Oskin and Draya, and now with Sexton and Thanachai for the stadium, this is good stuff. Definitely go check it out. I really, really think that you guys will enjoy it. And Sexton's starting to become a regular. For those of you who saw my year in kickfighting for 2014, the round that I had for round of the year was him and Song Kong, was they just kind of battled with low kicks back and forth. So definitely check this fight out. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. Going to go ahead and talk about a few notables as I wrap the show up. Israel Adesanya is a Australian-based fighter. I believe I'm pronouncing it right with Adesanya. He is an Australian-based fighter who just got a big win over Kim Loudon. And Kim Loudon is a guy who is – he was the Knees of Fury champion. It's a promotion that they have there in Thailand. And for Israel to get this victory just shows that he's doing a good job. He has a contract to fight on the Glory brand, but you want to get yourself better before that. So whenever I hear that he is going out there and doing something like this, or any Glory fighters going out there and looking for opportunities to compete in between, I know that they're pushing their career in the right way. So good stuff by Israel. Going to go ahead and go up to the Kunlun fights that I watched last night. Hezzy Haggis gets another victory. Low kick was kind of close. Could have been a groin kick. But he gets a win over Igor Begunko. And Hezzy Haggis is still dealing with his legal issues. But Kunlun has been loyal to him. Continuing to give him opportunities to be a prize fighter. Konstantin Glovev gets a victory over Mighty Mo. It says he's got a one round, a hand or arm injury. This is the second time he's fought in this promotion and that's happened. He probably shouldn't be in there anymore. Also, we want to mention that Mun Hyun-myeon gets a TKO victory over Won Luhan. I wasn't able to see that fight. But Andre Hirishmachuk, who I've mentioned before because he's the one who got the victory over Rico Verheeren last year, he gets a victory over Ashrin Balrog. And I love that Balrog's getting the opportunity. I mean, he's an old, savvy veteran. He's got to be closing in on 40 now. But he's got some pretty good wins, you know, in his career. And he's done a good job pushing the pace, making a name for himself, finding money as a prize fighter. I think he got into some legal troubles for a little bit. I could be wrong there. But I love that. Even if he doesn't win, he's a tough, gritty dude that's going to go out there and perform at a high level. So definitely good stuff there. And then the last fight that I'm going to mention is Alex Berhtua gets a victory over Boonsit. Boonsit was a guy who should have won this fight easily. All Alexis did, the French fighter who fights out of Tiger Muay Thai, all he did was give great effort. He just kept pushing and throwing shots. Whereas Boonsit in the second round settled in and just absolutely started to dominate. And I thought that this was going to be easy. But Boonsit seemed to feel that round two was enough for him to not do anything in round three. And Alexis just kept throwing. And he maybe stole the fight in the last 30 seconds just with flurries. Boonsit, you can't shut it down like that in the international level. You can't do it. Alexis Berhtua, you fought to the bell. And that's what got you the decision. I will mention one other fight. Li Bumeng defeated Alan Aldatov. Aldatov is a guy who's based out of Toronto, I want to say. I'm pretty sure he's placed out of Toronto, Canada. He goes out there, and I thought that he showed okay kickboxing, you know, as far as looking for combinations, looking for kicks. But Li Bumeng showed some really good boxing. Straight punches, one, two, threes, where they came down the middle and they threw the hook. His angles never got wide. He showed a good base throughout. He just showed good, steady kickboxing work. He got the big win, and that was the last victory on that card. So the crowd all went wild because of that. Going to go ahead and close it out with a show in France. Les Nudes Champions. I've mentioned them before. Les Nudes Champions been doing shows for a long time. And these guys, I'm telling you, the French do a really great job of challenging themselves against high-level Thais. You're going to see that in the last three fights that I talk about here. Two of those fights were guys going against Thais. Sitichai, Sitsong Pingnong gets a victory over Chris Masaku. Christ was never into this. He's a tall guy, and sometimes he uses length and closes the distance. But I think some of the shots that he received kept him from wanting to be aggressive. The combination style of Sitsyong Pingnong is only done in the right moments. So if you're bailing, he's going to go combination, he's going to go low kick, and he'll get to your back leg. If you're standing still, he's going to work a single shot. And if you get into the clinch, he's going to get his arms inside, he's going to tie you up in the biceps, he's going to get into the crook of your arm, and he's going to turn, he's going to look for short elbows. But one really cool thing that I want to mention for Siti Chai's performance, he was doing such a good job of attacking the legs. Little shots to the legs. What I mean by that is they would be in the grapple, and he would just pop these little knees in, just turning them over, just little daggers right at the right moment, right at the right time, really slowing Christ Bisoku down by getting his scoring the knees to the thigh. And the moment Christ looked like he was going to pay attention to him, Siti Chai would sneak an elbow and just score right over the top. It was really good stuff when he was inside. So not only did he win the outside, but he really won the grapple on the inside. And he did it not just by getting body lock and holding on. As soon as he got in those positions, he kneed the taller man in his thighs over and over while they're in the grapple, while he's got the bicep hold. He just continued to work in there. Good stuff by Siti Chai as he gets another international win. And I want to see him back in glory. I want to see him back fighting some of the best guys in the world, because he's probably the best international Thai right now as far as consistency against high-level guys. Of course, there's still Bacall, but Bacall's competition hasn't been what Siti Chai's competition has been of late, who's got victory over Andy Sauer and so on. So next fight I'm going to talk about is Bubu Sako as he meets in the tournament, four-man tournament final against Pech Bunshu FA Group. Pech Bunshu struggled to get the cards as of late. He struggled to get wins over Bubu Sako, and then before over Greg Wooten. But I thought he won this one. I thought Pech Bunshu came out, started, landing the body kick. He let the right leg go. I thought he did a good job of turning Bubu Sako when they got into the clinch. I thought he dumped him a few times. I thought that he, did a good job of, not letting a lot of offense score in the clinch. I thought Sako most of the time was just, jumping and gasping and trying really hard, but I thought that he's playing from behind like pretty much all the fight. But in the third round, Bubu Sako, who probably outweighed Pech Bunshu by 780 pounds, continued to just walk Pech Bunshu down. He started to have success by throwing his power leg at the inside leg of Pech Bunshu, and then he would just get into the grapple and just kind of flurry and then hold. And Pech Bunshu, who was way smaller, I thought still did a good job of withstanding a lot of it, but the body language definitely worked against him. And I just think that it's like, again, Sako, these guys are way bigger than Pech Bunshu, way bigger. But I thought that he did enough to win, particularly if you go off round one and round two. And I do think, historically, France is one of the more fair places as far as the judging of these fights. They do a much better job of being fair when it comes down to breaking these fights, scoring these fights. So Pech Bunshu loses, I think, because of the pressure of Sako in the last round. But I like that Pech Bunshu is still getting these international opportunities. He is fighting bigger, and that's one of the things that makes Sanchai so special. Sanchai would do these opportunities, fight bigger, and still win. But I like that a guy who fights in the stadium is getting the opportunity to see the world and getting the opportunity to compete and let people know just how good he is, despite the fact that the decision didn't go his way this time. Last fight in the card I'm going to talk about is Gallo Carcino is against a guy who I'm really high on, Ayub El Kedar. I want Kedar to go fight in, if you're going to do 55 kgs, if you're going to do 60 kgs, if you're doing that stuff, if that's all going down in Japan, I want to see Ayub El Kedar on those cards. This fight, I remember somebody sent it to me and said it's one of the fights of the year. When I watched it, I thought it was a solid fight, but I didn't think it was fight of the year. But in the fifth round, there's something that's definitely going to be my year kickboxing highlight. And there's a moment where Ayub and Gallo are just going back and forth with kicks. Before, there's all these weird moments where Ayub was hit with a knee to the groin, and I think the knee may have scored clean, but the shin came up and got in the groin both times. And then, of course, after you're hurt, you get hit again, you're still hurt. And it's so weird how this works, because when this happened to Rim Bonjowski, who literally was hurt, they took him out of the tournament, then came back and fought, and the first shot he took was another shot to the groin. It sucks when it hurts down there, and then you get hit down there again. The follow-up shot doesn't even have to be that powerful. If it's already hurting, and you're already fighting through pain, you're just getting to get more pain. And I will never think that it's a soft deal when a guy gets hit in the groin, thanks to what happened when I was out in France, when I was watching the It's Showtime card, and if I'm remembering this correctly, it was Alid El Hajj, when he took a shot from Petrosian, and he was in bad shape, and I think they went to the cards or they called it a no contest, but they rushed him to the hospital, and he had surgery on his testicles. When that happened to El Hajj, when that happened to Chalid, that's when I was like, okay, if somebody gets in the groin, it's a serious deal. You know what I'm saying? Bojowski was taken out of a tournament thanks to it. It's never fun. So when guys are rolling on the ground, even though it might seem theatrical and so on, I just can't take it for granted anymore. It could be a really, really bad shot. So definitely good stuff by Ayoub for fighting back despite that. And then they had that moment in the fifth where him and Gallo were just exchanging kicks, body kicks, low kicks, body kicks, low kicks. It literally was to the rhythm of bang, 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 bang. And it continued for like 35, 40 seconds. That series will probably make my highlight at the end of the year. That was really, really good stuff. Ayoub gets the victory. And like I said, I want to see more from him on the international scene. Thank you all for listening to the show. Thanks for following. I'll do my best to continue to upload things on a regular basis. I'll continue to come back with fights. I'll be back next week probably to talk about the Lion Fight promotion, talk about Irina Bars as she defends her title. It should be fun. I'm excited about kickboxing coming up, and I'm grateful and thankful for all you guys that are listening to my podcast. So continue to follow me, continue to, follow me on Twitter, continue to post in questions. I'm definitely down to answer. I tried to be a little bit more technical this time and explain things that I saw and little savvy things that I saw in there. And then I also want to talk about the bigger picture, because everything's about the bigger picture in kickboxing and in Muay Thai. So thank you for listening. God bless and have a good one. Peace.